Downway FM presents
Hello and welcome to another episode of China Business Cast, brought to you by Downway FM. I'm your host, Robert Ness. Today I'm talking to Chinese Pod, the podcast that helps you learn Chinese on your own terms. They're one of the earliest language podcasts in China and the world, and they're the most popular. I'm speaking with Ken, one of the founding principals, and we're going to get some insights into how the language podcasting thing works and the future of education in the Web 2.0 时代. Let's get started.
We started in September 2005, and the idea was to produce something to teach Mandarin Chinese. So the model basically is we use podcasting. It's kind of like a Web 2 kind of thing. We use podcasting, blogging, RSS indications, stuff like that, to reach an audience. And then we split the service. That is, a lot of the stuff is free, and that brings traffic to the website. And then the other part of it, there is a premium service, which people then can pay extra for the extra services. So essentially, it's a way to teach Chinese. And it's the business model is the split service. Mm. Yeah.
Any competitors in China?
Yeah. So what we're seeing is a lot of small startups attempting it, trying to do this, trying to do that. We know what the barriers to entry are in terms of how to grow the business, and so we kind of know what's holding them back. So yeah. So one of the questions for us is, where is this big challenge going to come from in the future? Is it going to be from, the Simon and Schusters and the Pimslers and those large organizations? Or is it going to be from a small sort of, a plucky startup who wants to sort of attack us? And probably both. So there's lots of small operations doing podcasting to teach Chinese more than any other language, which is interesting. And I think we've sort of started a trend there. There are several trends, podcasts in learning Chinese, and very few in the bigger languages, and that's kind of interesting. Mm. Hard to say, Robert. We definitely do expect to be kind of attacked, but where it's going to come from, it's hard to say.
What are those barriers to entry you just mentioned?
Okay, well, as I said, it's easy to produce a podcast. It doesn't cost a whole lot of money. Producing a good podcast is another matter, I think. I mean, producing a quality podcast, you need to have people who really know what they're doing. Mm. But that in itself is not really a barrier to entry. There are plenty of people who could probably figure that out. And putting a blog together is also, fairly straightforward. It's very simple. It's not very costly. Once again, the point would be similar. Not everybody blogs very well. Some people blog and it just works for them. Some people don't. But no, for me, the real barrier to entry here is that because we have the split service, right? So part of it is free. The podcasts are free. But what really takes the time and the organization and the effort and the investment is the premium services, right? So that's stuff that's done on the website, right? Now, that has to be planned out, right, properly. So you need an academic team. You need a team who write the stuff. Yeah, the team, you have to plan out the whole thing, because you can't just start doing this stuff and just wander around the language. You need to know what you're doing. Then it needs to be academically sound. Then you need a team of people to code it and to produce it and to actually produce the stuff that you get online, the software, the exercises, the transcripts, and all of that stuff. And we have a very rigid schedule. It's, 5 days a week for Chinese pod. Those lessons have to be done. They have to be on time. They have to be checked. Production has to be there. The audio has to mix with it. So there's actually quite a lot of work, building the business model around that. Now, again, so I said the podcast is easy enough. The blogging, it's not that difficult, but it's building a service around that. Now, another, feature of that is that you have to base your premium service on the needs and the wants of your key segments, right? So you have to know who your key segments are. In other words, there's a lot of people listen to Chinese Pod, but the question is who pays for it, right? And so what you've really got to be able to drill down into who your users are. Mm-hmm. So you need some marketing people. You need to understand that. You need your proper database management, stuff like that. And then you need to identify and say, who are the key groups? And then you got to try to figure out, well, why are they paying? What is it that they're paying for? Then what we do is we try to connect with those people and ask them, well, what else is it that you want, right? And it's using that kind of feedback to say, you know, what does the service lack? What can we build on here? You tell us. And then we'll take it from there and we'll get a team to focus on that and say, this is what is lacking. This is what we need to put our resources into developing.
Tell me about those users who pay for the premium services. What's your understanding of them?
Okay.
Why do they pay?
Okay. Interesting. There's a number of reasons why they pay. In a general sense, the reason they pay is that they're looking for something extra, right? So the trick is to find out what that is and then to get the team on it. It's interesting. I mean, it's been interesting for me because we've been kind of surprised by some of the demographic reactions. In other words, who pays and why they pay. A lot of people, as I found, are, you know, we've seemed to have attracted a fairly significant segment of people who they tick it on the little box. Why do you study Chinese? They say for personal growth reasons. Mm. That's kind of interesting. Because I would have thought that the biggest segment by far would have been the business segment. You know, I'm doing it because I need to. I do business in China or with China, and that is this very significant segment for us. I was kind of surprised by the idea that, you know, personal growth, and I think people are looking for ways, you know, to expand their thinking or their experience or their knowledge of cultures and stuff like that. So I guess to follow on from my last point, that's a slightly tricky one because what exactly does personal growth mean? It could mean one thing to you and something to somewhere else. So I kind of described the science of it, but it is a little bit more complex exactly what they want. They want to learn, sure. They want to learn the culture. They want to understand. They want to be able to do stuff. A lot of them want to be able to do stuff. Essentially, I mean, we have lots of users in the UK who've never been here, or the States. They've never been here, and they probably don't meet with Chinese people very often. But they love the idea that they could go to a Chinese restaurant with their friends, you know, talk some Chinese maybe, order in Chinese, stuff like that. I think people set these sort of personal growth challenges. Mm. And again, this is a big thing for me, I think, in this Web 2 era. I see learning is becoming ever more important for us in the future. And I think we're getting a glimpse of that type of thing. Obviously, there are other people who have strictly business reasons. They, you know, to study Chinese, they do it because they're in business and they got to talk and stuff like that.
So aside from the podcast itself is free. The audio.
Yes.
Do you have video?
Yeah, we do use video. But it's not part of our normal services. In other words, the lessons are complete. You have audio, then you have transcripts and exercises and so on. So each lesson is complete. They're quite short, 10, 12 minutes around that. They're tagged very clearly so that if you're looking for a lesson on a particular topic or a grammar point, you just click it and you find it and so on. Now, we haven't really found a way to combine that with video. The reason being is that I actually don't really see, from the user's perspective, a very compelling reason why video would add to that experience.
Right.
I can see some ways, yeah. But it would obviously, seriously affect the economics of what we do.
Mm-hmm.
And that cost would obviously be passed on to the user. So my read of it is that, you know, video is great for promotional purposes and put some videos out. And it's a very, very good branding thing, I believe, video, you know, to personalize your brand, to personalize your organization, and to have them do some short videos and post them on YouTube. So that's great. But a video podcast to teach Chinese, I don't really see a compelling reason to do that right now.
Yeah, is it that people want to learn Chinese when they're on the subway to work or
in
the car on the work the morning?
That's one of the key points. When you have audio, you've got mobility.
Right.
And that's a big thing. So, everybody's talking video. Absolutely, there's no question. YouTube proves it. Video is enormous. 100 million downloads a day or something on YouTube. That's fine. But I think audio is audio, video is video. And, you know, we're trying to reach an audience of busy people who have other stuff to do. And as you said, exactly on the subway or on the car on the way to work or at the gym, that they can kind of double up and own the gym and do two things at once, or they can kill downtime. You're sitting in the doctor's office or something like that.
So you like get work out your Chinese and your abs at the same time. Yeah.
I need to do some of both. Actually.
So aside from the audio component, then what are the paid services? What are the different kinds of paid services you have?
Okay, well, you've got for example the transcripts of the language that you hear, right? So you get the characters. Got stuff like, you know, you can have the rollover effect where you run your cursor over it. You get the characters and the opinion and explanations. Then you get exercises that expand upon them. You got flashcards. You got a vocabulary bank where you can save your own personal dictionary, you know, your own phrases, words, whatever. There's a couple of games in there. There's tests. There's flash animated activities to walk. There's a whole bunch of stuff in there.
So you hit... In terms of language learning media, you're hitting it from every angle.
That's the idea. That's the idea. Mm-hmm. Of course, what we can't do is the speaking angle. You know, they can. So what we deliver. I mean, my own view is that we can deliver, you know, at least half and maybe more of what the best language schools can offer, right? Mm-hmm. In a much more convenient way and at a much lower cost. For example, we can. First of all, you get a lesson. Right, so there's a teacher and a practitioner, as we call them, and that might be me or it might be John Pasden or whatever. Now, you know, having worked in language schools and actually I own some language schools in Shanghai, I can tell you that it's very difficult to maintain the quality in language schools. You know, if you've got like 50 teachers in the language school, it is very difficult to maintain the quality, you know. That to say that every one of those 50 teachers is great, you know, it's a very difficult thing to do. Now, with a podcast, however, what we've tried to do is get more experienced people, more experienced teachers, or people who have a talent or a knack for it, and get them to do it, right? And then we can actually test the quality. You can run a QC test to see every lesson before it goes out, did it meet our quality standards? So that's one advantage. So the first thing is you're getting really quality lessons, right? Now, the second thing is that the lessons come to you, right? So there's an element there where it's convenient, right? You can save them on your iPod and hopefully soon on your iPhone or whatever else that device will be called in the near future. And then after that, then, you know, there are other advantages, like, you know, when you want to sit down and do the study thing, it's up to you. So you're not tied to a schedule. You're not tied to a language school schedule and so on. So if I were to kind of, to sort of encapsulate one of the key differences there, let's say, would be if you want to, learn a language, let's say in the context of a language school, like going to a language school, you pretty much have to change your lifestyle, right? You know, even if it's evening classes, you've got to give up your 2-3 evenings a week for, it's going to take you a year, 2 years. And this is time in the evening when you could be doing other things. You could be pursuing other interests and so on. Right. So learning a language in that context is a really big commitment, right? And so what, you know, from our perspective, the way we think of it is we'll try to make the learning fit into your lifestyle rather than forcing you to make your lifestyle fit into the learning. So those are the kind of the motivations. So beyond that, in terms of speaking, we'll say, look, we'll give you at least half more, 60%, because we also, like, on the blogs and the feedback and the other, we'll give you lots more. We'll give you guidance, suggestion, learning how to learn, you know, discussions with other learners, and that's a really important key. Mm-hmm. But the actual practice at this stage is up to you to find, you know, to find that opportunity to actually use the stuff that you're learning, and that's up to the user.
Thanks for tuning in again to China Business Cast. I'm your host, Robert Ness, and this has been brought to you by Danway FM. Questions or comments, send me an email at robert@danway.org. See you next time.